Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
Hello and welcome into the Toasted Tavern. It has been a little while since we've been able to join you guys. I am Michael Wags, Wagon Connect, joined alongside by my co-host, Scott Tobin. And Scott, we're going to have to get you a nickname or something because, I'm Wags. We got to get a nickname for you or something so I can give you that wrestling, like Scott the Hitman Tobin or something like that. Come on.
Yeah, we'll have to come up with something. How are you doing, man?
Oh, you know, not too bad. Had to battle COVID a couple weeks ago. Still kind of recovering from that. And like everybody has said, it is absolutely no joke when it comes to the ramifications of COVID. Now, I mean, I didn't have it as bad as people had because I'm vaccinated, thankfully, but it is a rough one to come back from. The lungs go, and for a hockey player, that's not good. But so far, so good. We got the day off of school and work today because of the snow. I hope everybody got a chance to get outside and play around in it a little bit. Hopefully more is on the way, which they say it might. We'll see what happens because we all know how great meteorologists are when it comes to predicting the weather. But at least some of us got a day off today. You get the whole rest of the week off. Lucky you. But man, how are you doing? I know it's been a while since we've talked.
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right. Got the next couple of days off because of the weather. And then my dog has to have a little surgery towards the end of the week. So I got to kind of take care of him. But I'm doing okay. And from everything they're saying, this snow we're supposed to get tonight and tomorrow, and they've been saying that for the last couple of days, it's kind of the monster part of this storm. You know, they're saying by the time it's over, everybody in the St. Louis area is going to be over a foot probably. So, because, you know, the storm last night kind of went north to south, you know, because like Hannibal kind of coming down this way, got 11, 12 inches last night. You know, this one's coming from the southwest, it's coming straight up 44, so I'm probably going to get it before you do. But they're saying the same thing, that, you know, we're going to get between 8 and 10 inches out of this one. So everybody's going to be in that 11, 12, 13, 14 inch range by this time tomorrow night. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to going out and playing in the snow tomorrow, man, making some snow angels, you know, snowball fight, maybe doing a little sled and some stuff like that, being a kid for a couple days.
Hey, you know, that's what we have to do. And that's actually one of our professors said that exact thing on Monday. She was like, look, I already know what's coming. The school can't cancel because it's not here yet. But I already know what's going to happen. So go out there and enjoy yourself as a kid, because you don't get that option very much anymore as an adult with us having the full-time jobs and family obligations and all that kind of stuff. It's like when you get a chance to be a kid, you should be able to go out there and enjoy it as much as you can. So we were lucky enough to do that. But here's the thing. Here's the difference. As Blues Fan Reacts checks in, he is snowed in as well in Salt Lake City. He was here just about a week ago checking out some Blues games. Got to meet up on one of the games, the Thursday night game against Calgary. But here's the one good thing about being snowed in as an adult, still getting a chance to act like a kid. You get to drink alcohol, and that's so much better.
It really is. You know what? I spent most of my day today, I'm not going to lie, I made about three pots of coffee, and I had Bailey's and coffee most of the day today. You know, just warm kick back, you know, enjoying the cold weather. So, yeah, it's not been bad, man. It's not been bad.
Well, and you're going to have to kick back and maybe take a little liquid courage when it comes to looking at the things that are going down in the world of sports right now. I mean, we've got a lot of excitement, obviously. We got the big game. It is set. It is ready to go. We're going to talk about the Bengals-Rams matchup here in a little bit. You've got college basketball going on right now. Illinois is hosting Wisconsin, and they are winning at the half. Kofi Cockburn is going off. St. Louis University, a big double overtime victory tonight against George Mason. But then, and one other thing, USA beat Honduras in World Cup qualifying tonight as well up in frigid Minnesota. Why they put an outdoor game of soccer in Minnesota in February is beyond me, because you kind of know what you're getting. Look at the Winter Classic last month. But USA did come away with the victory there. But then on the flip side, you have to look at all the struggles that are going on in the world of sports right now. We talked about college basketball. The Mizzou Tigers fell again today, not looking so great as far as getting closer and closer to, you know, conference tournament and things of that nature. Sorry. I know.
Had to laugh when you say Mizzou Tigers in tournament right now.
Well, they technically can get into the conference tournament, right? Every team makes the conference tournament.
They do. They'll be the 12th seed, and they'll get knocked out in the first round, and then we'll go home again. Yeah, not what Tiger basketball fans are used to or remember. But anyway, I digress. Yeah. Let's move on.
You've got Major League Baseball and the Players Association still not anywhere close to finalizing any sort of agreement whatsoever. And yesterday, February 1st, was kind of the target date to get things going with spring training starting on time. Obviously, that's passed and no agreement has been made. So we'll see how that plays out as we get closer to, well, when pitchers and catchers were supposed to report. Probably isn't going to happen on time. Then you've got things going down in the world of hockey. The Blues not doing so hot as they wrapped up their stretch before the Olympics / All-Star break. A couple of wins, couple of losses. We'll talk a little bit about that as well if we have time because the trade deadline is coming up. But you also have to look at the NFL where it's dominating the headlines. There are so many things going on in the NFL right now between coaches coming and going, players coming and going, and we had to start off first, though, with the lawsuit. The big lawsuit that made headlines yesterday and kind of almost made people forget about the St. Louis lawsuit that just got settled right around Christmas time. Brian Flores, formerly of the Miami Dolphins, formerly of the New England Patriots, filed a lawsuit against the NFL and three teams, the Miami Dolphins, the New York Giants, and the Denver Broncos, all kind of around the basis of racial discrimination, in a sense. That's kind of what it boils down to. But there are a lot of other pieces that go along to this lawsuit as well. The biggest one for me, and the one that's kind of getting a lot of the attention behind it because other people are now starting to jump aboard this, Brian Flores alleges that Dolphins owner offered to pay him $100,000 per loss. He wanted his team to tank, and he wanted to pay Flores for that. And Brian Flores, being the stand-up guy that he is, was like, no, I want to win. I want to win games, and I want to put myself and my players in a good light. So he essentially didn't do it. And among other things that the owner did as well, really kind of put Flores at kind of arm's length, basically an outsider within his own organization. And you've got Hugh Jackson now coming on board talking about how the Browns had this same sort of scenario and teams are denying it. Players are denying it. Other coaches are denying it and supporting it at the same time. There's a lot of moving pieces that are going on around this lawsuit. And then you've got the interview processes between the Giants and the Broncos that Flores went through and alleged happened, as far as especially John Elway showing up to his interview hungover from drinking the night before. Once again, hard to collaborate that kind of story. But lots of things that are really wrapped up and around this. And I kind of want to get your thoughts on it because I didn't see this until last night. So you got a chance to really kind of dive into this a little bit, Scott. Tell me a little bit about what you've read into it and where this could actually be going.
It's a nightmare for the league, man. It's a nightmare for the league. We'll get to the racial discrimination part of it here in a minute because that's bad enough in itself. But when you start alleging and you start saying you have proof that owners are offering to pay coaches to lose, I mean, that totally takes any credibility away from the league, from games. I mean, think of all the things, think of all the people that may sue the league, because you're going to have casino. If you prove that, you could have casinos coming after the league because we know how big gambling is. That's going to affect lines. That's going to affect money that for casinos. It's going to affect whether people will even bet in the future, because if people don't have any real belief that what they're seeing is real, people are going to stop watching. I mean, this literally, in a lot of ways, could be the death knell of the NFL if it's proven, and I'm having technical issues here, obviously. It could definitely be the death knell to the league if you prove that what people are watching isn't really legit, that players aren't trying to win, the coaches aren't trying to win. And, I honestly made this statement today when I saw that and was talking to somebody back and forth on Facebook. And I said, you have Flores saying this, you have Hugh Jackson saying this. The first thing I thought was, think about Jeff Fisher and the Rams the last couple of years in St. Louis and the weird decisions that Fisher made at the ends of games. Remember the game, was it Case Keenum that had the concussion and he put him back in the game at the end of a tied game? Stan Kroenke wanted out of St. Louis so bad and wanted to drive attendance down. Why wouldn't you look at the Rams and say, go talk to Jeff Fisher, who's not real happy with the NFL right now. I'm not sure Jeff Fisher wouldn't be willing to talk, but I would almost be willing to bet that Kroenke tried to pay Fisher or somebody to try to have the Rams tank because he wanted to drive attendance down and make it look bad and get the hell out of St. Louis because he wanted to go to L.A. and make money. I mean, there's going to be so many things that you can look at and start digging into. This is the last thing the NFL wanted. And, I mean, talk about a league that just can't get out of its own way. I mean, one black eye after another, and it just keeps happening and happening and happening with, you know, the sexual discrimination in Washington with the cheerleaders and everything, with you know, all the stuff that's going on the field, off the field, you know, players having issues, owners having issues. The league's just giving itself one black eye after another, and its PR isn't good, you know, and this is the last thing it needs, because especially during the Super Bowl, because this is what everybody's going to be talking about. And then, you know, the whole thing with Bill Belichick sending Brian Flores a congratulations, you know, congratulations, you got the job, the day he had the interview, and then Flores going, wait, I just had the interview an hour ago. And, you know, Belichick already knew that Flores wasn't getting the job and basically told him, oh, yeah, sorry, I sent it to the wrong Brian. I'm pretty sure he's getting the job. You know, how does that happen? You know, and now Belichick's saying that he's embarrassed. Well, yeah, I'm sure you are, but it makes you know, it just makes the whole league look even worse. And how many scandals has Bill Belichick been tied to at this point in the New England Patriots? I mean, you know, it's just a really bad look for the league, and it's going to hurt the league. And like I said, it's all that anybody's going to be talking about now. Instead of talking about the two teams going into the Super Bowl and Super Bowl week, the only news that there's going to be is this now for the next 2 weeks, especially with no games going on.
I mean, this week it's absolutely going to dominate the headlines. But now, can you imagine what Super Bowl row is going to be like? Interview day, you know, when all the teams are there, how many of these players are going to be continuously asked, "Hey, have you ever been approached to, you know, be paid to throw a game?" Or, "Hey, has the coach ever talked to you about being paid to throw a game or anything like that?" And that's all that's going to be talked about, unfortunately, for the next couple of weeks. But here's the thing. It's something that needs to be talked about, because if this is what is actually going on, someone needs to bring it to the attention of the masses and prove it, because it is. It's a black eye on the league. It hurts, especially minority candidates, because you know, you talk about the Rooney Rule being something that was initially brought up to at least try and push more minority hirings in the coaching, the coordinators, the GM positions, maybe even into the executive roles. Well, now it's getting to the point where it's almost like a token interview where it's, hey, look, we know we have to do this, so come on in. We're going to talk to you real quick, satisfy the rule, and then boom, we weren't going to hire you anyway. I mean, I think that in certain teams, in certain cases, they do adhere to it properly where they're like, yes, we believe that this guy coming in is a guy that we would want to have as our coach. He may not be the guy that gets it, but we're legitimately going to interview him as for that purpose and that purpose alone. But then you do have teams. It is surprising how quickly some of these decisions are made where you go, man, they just had four interviews yesterday. How do they already know who their coach is going to be? This isn't something you should just interview guys and go, okay, we like you the best, come on in. You got to dig into philosophy. You have to dig into past. You have to do all this. Yes, they do their homework. But one interview, that's all it's going to take for you to decide who you want? No, they predetermined who they really wanted to bring in, and they're just doing this to satisfy the rule of the league to interview a minority candidate. And that's another piece of this lawsuit that's being kind of pushed, is the racial discrimination side of things. And look, we've heard from different people, including Deuce Staley, who basically said, hey, that's not the experience I have had when it comes to the interview process. But there are so many that have had it. You just look at the retreads, the continuously rehiring of coaches, when you have other coordinators out there that are deserving of a chance, at least, of being a head coach. We've seen a couple of hot name candidates not even really get interviews, at least none that we've heard of. And then you've got these other guys being hired left and right that have already coached and been fired two or three times.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, that's why a lot of people... You know, the Rooney Rule was made to try to make teams that said, okay, we have a problem. There's no minorities getting hired. But then there were a lot of minority people that when the Rooney Rule came out said, okay, this is a joke, because what's happening is exactly what was going to happen, and they all said it. They're going to say, okay, we'll have somebody come in, have no intention of hiring, interview them for 10 minutes, and say, okay, we did what you asked us to. We applied by the rules. So, you know, it's broken. It definitely needs to be fixed. I don't know how it happens, but you know, a perfect example, you talk about hot coordinators, you know, how long what's it been now? 3 years now that everybody talks about Eric Bieniemy. How many interviews has Eric Bieniemy actually had? You know, I mean, it doesn't even seem like he's being interviewed at all this year. You know, look at the Vikings, the whole, and we'll get into the Jim Harbaugh thing here in a minute. But even after that whole thing apparently has fallen apart, there's a list of candidates. There's no Eric Bieniemy. There's no Leslie Frazier. There's no Raheem Morris. None of those guys are on the list of even people that the Vikings are even thinking about now.
No, there's not. And these guys are guys that deserve chances. They really do, because they've proven, at least on the coordinator stage, that they can handle things. And yes, you look at it and you go, okay, well, yeah, it's one side of the ball. What are you going to do for the other side? But you're not asking that about white coordinators. You're not asking it about that. That's just not how it works. But yet they're continuously getting those opportunities, whereas minority candidates are not. It's baffling to me, but it's not at the same time, because I go back to the same point I make every single time we talk about the NFL. Who is in charge of the NFL? Old, rich, white guys.
Yep.
Why? I mean, that's exactly what it is. And in a league that is predominantly player-wise African-American and minority-driven, they're still being led by a minority of white coaches. I guarantee you, there is a plethora of former players out there that understand the game at a coordinator level that need to be given opportunities that therefore can eventually ascend to head coaching positions and maybe even further than that, GM position. There are multiple former players out there that have the knowledge and the desire to be a general manager, but no one gives them a chance. And that's because you look at the top again and it's controlled by the same amount of groupings of people that have done it for decades. And until that changes up there, you're not going to see changes at the lower level.
No, I totally agree with you. It's not going to change anytime soon. You know, like I said, the league's got a big problem. It's another black eye for the NFL. And, you know, this is a topic that we can talk about till we're blue in the face. And people are going to be, because, like you said, it's going to be the hot topic. It's going to be what everybody's questioned about. Imagine how many times the Bengals players are going to get questioned about that. So, hey, did you guys tank so that you could get Joe Burrow? Isn't it weird that you won 2 games and then you won 4 games and now all of a sudden you're in the Super Bowl? Did you tank last year so that you could get Jamar Chase? Did you guys, I mean, I know Joe Burrow got hurt, but were you not trying to win? You know, I mean, all those questions are going to come up next week, especially to the Bengals, because they did go from last to first all of a sudden. And, you know, how did you do that? How did you get all these good players? Did you try to lose so that you could get there? Was this, that's what's going to happen to those guys. And it's not fair, because they're not going to get the credit that they deserve for the season they've had, because they're going to get asked these stupid questions over and over and over and over and over again.
Yep. And once again, though, we're not blaming Brian Flores for bringing the lawsuit against
the NFL. No, absolutely not.
What it is. It's literally the actions of the NFL and what they've done to get to this point. And the last point I kind of want to talk about on this before we move on is, you know, we just saw what happened here in St. Louis with the city settling with the NFL, not taking this thing to trial. There's been a lot of backlash here, at least in the city and the county, about how we did not take the NFL to task and expose all of the dirty secrets. Is Brian Flores, A, going to be able to take this to trial, and B, will it get to trial? Do you feel like he would? I don't feel like Brian Flores is a guy that would be paid off. Obviously, he didn't take the payment for losing games, so he's not going to be paid off by the NFL to go away. But do you see that this able to go to trial at all? And if that's the case, do we finally get dirty secrets on the NFL?
No, it won't go to trial, because Brian Flores will settle, because if he doesn't and if he goes to trial, his chances of ever having a career as a coach again in the league are over. You know, and it's not like there's a whole lot of other places he can go and coach football and make a living. You know, you can say, oh, the XFL, but it's not like he's going to go there and make the same kind of money, or the USFL or anything else. So, no, it's not going to go to trial. The NFL has too much money, too much power. There's too many companies behind it. It will not go to trial. It'll get buried and settled, and, you know, same thing that always happens with the NFL.
Yep. And then real quickly, 10 years though, down the line, we'll be in the same spot.
Probably 5 years. Yeah. But, you know, we're talking about them asking players and teams if they're tanking for draft picks. They won't be asking the Rams that, because the Rams don't have a draft pick till like 2050.
Yeah, the Rams have nothing to lose, essentially.
No. No, we gave away all our draft picks. We're playing for now, and then we're going to suck for the next 20 years. Because they don't have a first-round pick until, I believe, either 2025 or 2026 is the first time they have a first-round pick. And they don't have a second or a third this year or next year.
I mean, yeah, they are pushing for the now and the now, and that's about it. I mean, if they win, maybe it satisfies the fan base for a couple of years. I mean, if there is even a fan base at all, as we saw against the 49ers. But, you know, it does give them there's the championship grace period, essentially. You get about 2 or 3 years after winning a championship, I guess, to kind of go through the process of getting back to the championship. Outside of like baseball or something like that, maybe even hockey a little bit, the turnover is enough that those two leagues and teams can kind of rebuild quickly and get back. Whereas, you know, it seems like in the NFL, especially, it is a lot harder to get back there, outside of the Patriots and outside of the Bucks until, you know, this past week when a certain someone decided to stop playing. Yeah, it is hard to get back there, so I think it does give them a bit of a grace period. But once again, without having much of a fan base, what do you really need a grace period for? Because you don't have anybody that's going to root for you.
Right. They don't have fans now, and they're winning, and they're going to the Super Bowl. What's going to happen in 3 years when Aaron Donald and Matthew Stafford and Jalen Ramsey and Odell Beckham are all gone, and they don't have any draft picks, and they're in cap hell, so they can't really rebuild the team money-wise? Well, I mean, Kroenke doesn't care. You know, he's trying to win a couple of championships then, and then they'll have 20 years of sucking like they did in L.A. before, and you'll have 20,000 people in that stadium, you know, other than when they play the Packers or somebody and you bring in big crowds that way. You know, it's going to be exactly the way the Rams were in L.A. You know, I mean, Eric Dickerson was breaking records, and they were playing for championships in the 80s, and there were 35,000 people there.
So this just popped into my head just now, and I don't think it's going to happen because I don't see it being what the overall process is going to be, but this has to have entered Kroenke's head at some point, right? So the Rams, God forbid, win the Super Bowl this year. Why does he not put the team up for sale after they win the Super Bowl? Height of possibility. They're the highest ranked team right now. They won a championship. Their value could not be higher as far as, you know, promotability. He doesn't sell the stadium. He keeps the stadium, keeps that revenue stream incoming, but he sells the team after they win a championship, goes out on top. I mean, that has to at least maybe enter his mind, right?
Maybe. You know, and that would be the best thing in the world that could happen for the Rams and for the football fans in Los Angeles. I think Stan Kroenke's ego is probably too big because of the TV money and everything else. He probably won't do that, you know. But, you know, that would be the best thing that would happen to LA fans. Quick, funny story about Stan Kroenke. So Stan Kroenke and Dean Spanos, who owns the Chargers, hate each other. Like, they're literally fighting. Charger employee in, you know, both teams work out of the same building. They hate each other so much that Charger employees and Ram employees that work at the stadium are not allowed to talk to each other.
Oh my. that is like the worst level of anything I can think. Like, really, you work in the same building and you're not allowed to talk. So like if you had a relationship with somebody on the other side, this is almost like the Montagues and the Capulets in Romeo and Juliet. Like, you have Romeo and Juliet going down at an NFL stadium between two professional franchises because you can't trust people to talk to each other. Holy crap.
Well, I mean, it should tell you what a horrible person and business person Stan Kroenke is when Vince McMahon comes out and talks about what a horrible person Stan Kroenke is to do business with, and you can't trust him, and he's horrible to deal with, and he'll stab you in the back, and he's stupid. Vince McMahon is calling you out. You're pretty low.
Yeah, you're very, very low. Very low. Well, let's leave that aside. We could talk hate on Stan Kroenke all night if we really wanted to, but
oh, yeah.
more NFL stuff going on. You alluded to it earlier, the Minnesota Vikings head coaching search. Looked to be zeroed in on Jim Harbaugh out of Michigan. It seemed like rumors and everything coming out today was that, hey, he was being interviewed and he was going to take the job and he was leaving Michigan. He had prepped his players, everything on National Signing Day. He was going to walk out the door and leave. Everybody was like, here it is, Jim Harbaugh back in the NFL. We even put it out there that he was coming back. Well, guess what? He's not. He called Michigan and said, look, I'm not going. You got me until you want to get rid of me. This isn't going to be an issue going forward. I interviewed for it. No job offer was made. I'm sticking here in Michigan. Once again, this is not the first time that we've had like a will he, won't he do something kind of thing in the last couple of weeks. We'll talk about the other one here in just a second. But Jim Harbaugh is staying at Michigan. I told you I was surprised that when we thought he was taking the Vikings job, I said I was surprised that he was doing it because he had really one good year at Michigan. It's not like he was going to a team just flush with talent. He's got a team with good talent, a team that if Aaron Rodgers leaves Green Bay, very likely is the favorite in that division right now. But I would have been surprised if he would have left Michigan for Minnesota without kind of a sure thing.
Yeah, although it was the perfect time for him to leave Michigan because he was coming off, you know, finally beating Ohio State. He had a great team at Michigan. You know, they played in the playoffs. Yeah, they got beat really bad, but he'd finally done all of those things. And so it was the right time. It was probably his best chance to jump to the NFL right now, because when you look at everything that he's losing in the draft at Michigan, Michigan may not be real tough again now for the next couple of years. You know, they're losing some of their top players. I mean, their defensive end is probably going to be the number one player in the draft. You know, their St. Louis area running back is going. You know, they're losing a bunch of players in this draft. So, you know, it was probably the perfect time. And Minnesota did make sense if Aaron Rodgers left Green Bay and, you know, the guy that we talked about isn't going to be there. You know, Minnesota might have been the best team in the NFC when you talk about Cousins and you talk about the running back and the receivers and everything. You know, it might have been a perfect match, but apparently he's decided to stay, which tells me that Minnesota wasn't willing to meet his financial number, and so he decided to go back to Michigan. And like you said, he told them that this isn't going to be an issue, so I guess Jim Harbaugh is going to be in Michigan for quite a while now. Although the fact that he says that, hey, this isn't going to be an issue, we've seen coaches say that before, and then a week from now somebody makes a call, and he's like, oh, wait a minute, I said it wasn't an issue because I'm leaving now. See ya.
Because, you know, Alabama needs a new coach. I'm out of here. I'm going down to Alabama to take over for Nick Saban. Yeah, that's how it works in college football. It really does. And if it's college football, if it's the NFL, coaches are always looking to jump to the next big thing, whether it's the next big payday or the next big challenge. That's, once again, that's kind of my issue with the NCAA, and that's another story in and of itself about how coaches are able to jump ship whenever they want and there's no consequences, essentially. Wherein players can't do that as well if there's a situation there. I think there's a better way to handle that, but that's a whole other story. We won't talk about that right now. You got to look at the Vikings situation. Kevin O'Connell from the Rams, their offensive coordinator, is now their top choice. So they're moving in a different direction. But once again, you alluded to it. This is a guy that they already interviewed. And if Harbaugh, whose name really just came up within the last week after they hired their general manager, they already had this guy ready to go. They knew what they wanted. And once again, it's a guy that is not Eric Bieniemy in a sense. So what, I don't even know where I want to go with this because it opens up so many different cans of worms. It's ridiculous. What's Minnesota going to do? Are they going to go with O'Connell from the Rams, their offensive coordinator? Or do you feel like maybe they need to cycle back and maybe rethink about what they're looking for?
It sounds like he's their top choice, you know, so that's probably the direction they're going. I think they're definitely going to go offensive-minded head coach now after having the defensive head coach the last few years, so I think that's probably the direction they're going. The only thing I can say about Eric Bieniemy, the only thing that I hope is that maybe he just doesn't interview well. You know, maybe there's something along those lines that why he can't get a job, although, like I said, the last couple of years he hasn't really interviewed much at all, so I'm not sure that that's the problem either, but anyway, you know, it'll be interesting to see where Minnesota goes, and the head coaching carousel moves on, keeps rolling, and won't be long. We'll be talking about free agency in the NFL.
Yeah, and a team that's going to be probably active in free agency is a team that now needs a quarterback, because Tampa Bay Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady retired, but then he didn't, but then he did. If you followed us last week, you know that near the end of the week, reports came out, especially from Adam Schefter, that Tom Brady was retiring. Everybody was like, wow, congrats, 22-year career, all those championships, well done. And Tom Brady's dad comes out and goes, whoa, he never said anything about retiring. And Brady never officially came out and said he's retiring. So everybody started to backtrack. Well, what's he going to do? Then it came out that he was waiting for a bonus that he doesn't necessarily have to wait for because it's a payment of his salary. All this goes down. Well, he finally officially retires the other day, and it's the end of an era. I mean, I put it out there. I mean, those of us in St. Louis, we hated Tom Brady early on, especially. We hated Tom Brady. He was the bane of St. Louis's existence, and we just couldn't stand him. At this point now, you look at it and you go, okay, I could still hate him because that team in St. Louis should not have lost that game. But the respect level's there because he did what he did over the course of the time that he did it. And his last 2 years in Tampa, he really became a human being in our eyes, in a sense. He was funny. He was personable. He was relatable, as much as a multimillionaire married to a supermodel can be relatable. But he became a human in our eyes, and I think you can respect and dare I say it, almost like him a little bit at this point in time. But give me your thoughts on the Tom Brady retirement, and where do you see the Bucs going from here?
Yeah, I mean, I think Brady probably always was going to retire, you know, but from everything I've heard, you know, he didn't want to do it over the weekend. He wanted, out of respect for the championship games, he wanted to wait till this week where there was nothing else going on before you got into championship week next week, media week next week. And, you know, Adam Schefter and those guys kind of jumped the gun, and before he could announce it, they announced it. And so I think that pissed him off. I think it pissed his people off. It pissed the Buccaneers off because they felt like somebody like Tom Brady deserved the opportunity to be the one to make that announcement, not Adam Schefter or whoever. So they kind of pulled back and said, hey, we don't know anything about this. And, you know, kind of waited. And Tom did make the announcement yesterday. Like you said, you know, we hated him in St. Louis because of Spygate, everything else. And then there was Deflategate, and then, you know, just Bill Belichick and the whole Patriot thing in general we hated. But like you said, you know, he got away from New England and was able to be a person. And I think most of the country the last couple of years was like, hey, this Tom Brady guy is not that bad. He's kind of funny and he actually seems like a normal guy. And, you know, you do have to give him credit. You know, he won a lot of games, won a lot of championships. A lot of people will call him the GOAT. I still put Joe Montana right there with him, because of the fact that Montana didn't ever lose a championship game in the Super Bowl, you know, won all four of his and didn't have any of the drama that Brady had. But definitely one of the great quarterbacks of all time to be able to play for 22 years. And just in that fact is amazing. The guy's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And, you know, now he gets to go enjoy his kids and his supermodel wife and, you know, do whatever he wants. And I'm sure we haven't seen the end of Tom Brady. I would imagine that he'll be in the media or something at some point.
Yeah, I think so, too. Somebody's going to hire him at some point and put him in a position to talk football for sure. And, you know, talking about the Hall of Fame, Big Ben had been retired for less than a week when this all came out. So Ben, once again, is probably saying, screw you, Tom. I wanted my time in the sun, and I did not get it. And you also have the fact that this is might be out of the blue, but Aaron Rodgers is not out of the realm of possibility of retiring either. You could potentially have three of the top quarterbacks in NFL history retiring in the same year, which would put that class in 2027 as one of the most prolific in the history of the game. And that's just the three quarterbacks. There's other players that have retired this year that make you go, man, this could be a massive NFL Hall of Fame class. And some guys may even get left out because these two, maybe three guys have retired. So, you know, looking at that 2027 class, is it going to go down as the best in history? Are we going to see Aaron Rodgers potentially retire as well and get that trio going into the Hall of Fame together?
You know, it's going to be pretty impressive, just Tom and Ben going in together. I'm going to say no, that you don't see the trio for a couple of reasons. I think Rodgers is too competitive. I don't think he's ready to go out yet. And second of all, we know how massive Aaron Rodgers' ego is and how much he thinks of himself. I don't think he would retire right now because he would realize that if he went into the Hall of Fame the same year as Tom Brady, he's not going to get top billing. Brady will, and Rodgers will kind of be the afterthought. And knowing Aaron Rodgers' ego and how much he thinks of himself, he's going to want to be the main event when he goes to the Hall of Fame. He's not going to want to play second fiddle to Tom Brady.
Well, and just looking at the potential class of 2027, not including an Aaron Rodgers, you've got Brady and Roethlisberger obviously at the top. Adrian Peterson is a guy that could be in that class as well. Rob Gronkowski is a guy because he's going to retire after this year officially. Somebody threw out there Antonio Brown is a guy that could potentially join him in the Hall of Fame. I don't know if that's the case for sure. But he is a guy that might possibly retire as well. So there are a ton of options that are going to be in that 2027 class. And if your top four in that class are Brady, Big Ben, Adrian Peterson, and Rob Gronkowski, that's a hell of a class right there. Some of the tops at their positions, especially in the last decade or so. That's going to be one fun class to watch and to see what kind of speeches they give out for sure, especially Gronk.
Oh, yeah. No, that place will be – Canton will be packed with those guys. They'll be – just with all the Steeler fans being that close. And then you talk about Brady, all the people from New England coming down there in Tampa. Yeah, that'll be – that would be an exciting experience. You talked about Antonio Brown real quick. It sounds like he's planning on coming back. Him and Lamar Jackson have already discussed the possibility of him going to Baltimore and playing there. So I don't think we've seen the last of AB, as crazy as that sounds in the league. And again, I don't think Aaron Rodgers retires either. I think he's going to, I don't think he'll be in Green Bay next year. I don't think. Although that would probably be the smart play because the NFC is going to be brutal. Whereas if you go to the AFC, you're really going to have to fight, really make a big stand to get in the playoffs in the AFC. So I think the NFC would be the smarter move, but I don't think Aaron Rodgers is in Green Bay next year.
Yeah, you look at the AFC, you got Patrick Mahomes, you got Joe Burrow, you've got Josh Allen, just to name three, and that's not including Justin Herbert out in LA as well. So there's a lot of people to go through, a lot of teams to go through in the AFC. And you know, we did put up a post a couple weeks ago about where we thought Aaron Rodgers might be going. You know, obviously the Steelers will be near the top of the list. There's a rumor that, you know, the Giants are a team that maybe moving on from Daniel Jones, and you could throw him up there, but I don't know if Aaron Rodgers would go to New York with the lack of weapons. I mean, if he would leave Green Bay, it's because of the lack of weapons that they provided him. Even though he's been able to make guys into stars up there, he's going to want to go to a team that has potential. You know, do you see him maybe going to a San Francisco, or do the Broncos end up making a play for him? And if that's the case, you know, which of those two teams in your mind have the better weapons for him?
I think if he has the opportunity, Aaron would like to go to San Francisco. I mean, he talked about being, you know, he grew up in that area. He talked about being devastated when he didn't get drafted by the 49ers. Although we also know that Aaron Jones doesn't forget. Aaron Rodgers doesn't forget. You know, he's got a pretty long memory. So maybe he wouldn't go to San Francisco just because he's still angry about that. But I think San Francisco and Denver are the two spots that make the most sense. And we've heard the most smoke come from those two places. We know Denver tried to make a move for him last year in the offseason. Although there's going to be a lot of things going on in Denver. I don't know if you saw Denver. The Broncos officially went up for sale today as the trust for Pat Bowlen. You know, Pat Bowlen, their owner for so long, passed away a couple of years ago. And there was a trust set up to keep the team in the family until 2021. It just expired. So they're going up for sale. So, you know, if there's a some business people in St. Louis that want to come together and put together about a $4 billion offer, we can move the Broncos into the dome and watch Stan squirm as we bring another football team to St. Louis.
Bring the Broncos to St. Louis, bring in Aaron Rodgers at the quarterback position, let him play out his final years in a dome and wreak havoc on a realigned NFC.
Bring the Broncos to St. Louis, rebrand them as the Stallions. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers isn't coming to St. Louis, but neither are the Broncos, but it's fun to talk about.
Yeah, and the natural rivalry with Kansas City still in the AFC West. Yeah. I mean, it'd be perfect. It'd be a perfect setup for it for sure. Now, we know we're getting the Chargers, so just go buy your Justin Herbert jerseys while you can.
I would love to see Justin Herbert in St. Louis. That's not going to happen either, but it would be fun.
Hey, powder blue works perfectly here in St. Louis. Blues, Cardinals, Chargers, / Stallions. I mean, come on. There's a reason why powder blue works here in St. Louis. All right, let's jump over and talk baseball real quick. I mean, there's not really a whole lot to report on because not much is going on. Major League Baseball and the Players Association reconvened for talks yesterday. Still, nothing has really been decided. Pitchers and catchers are supposed to report on February 14th. It's looking more and more likely that that is not going to happen. Spring training is very likely to be delayed. I mean, we knew that this was the possibility. We knew that this was going to be a long fight on both sides. But the fact that, you know, we knew it was going to be a fight, but the fact that no punches have essentially been thrown yet. No real offers have gone back and forth. We've had a couple of things here and there, some reduction of items, some pushing of items, what have you, but we've only had the one real official offer from Major League Baseball to the Players Association, and that was roundly rejected. The fact that we haven't had really any progress or push forward in the last couple of weeks is something that's really getting baseball fans worried. Now, we were talking before the show, you're like, I don't see regular season games being canceled. This is going to be settled before the regular season starts. There will be some sort of spring training, maybe very, very short. But we're getting closer and closer to that point of no return. And we saw this back in 2020 with the COVID issues and all that stuff. And it is a different situation for sure. But we talked then about how this fight now was going to happen. And now we're in it. And nothing has really changed since then. Are we at a point where next week or so we get to a point of no return and we start to worry about regular season stuff being in jeopardy?
March 1st. March 1st is the point where I start to worry. Because, you know, if you get something settled by March 1st, yeah, I know that you're going, wait a minute, the season's supposed to start at the end of March. You give it a week, you get players, you know, players, and for the most part, players don't need 6 weeks of spring training. You know, those guys are ready. Adam Wainwright said it 2 or 3 times in the last couple of weeks. Those guys are working out. A lot of those guys are going to be in Florida, or probably already are in Florida, you know, working out individually, getting a few guys together, doing things. They're going to be in shape. Yeah, the team, they're not doing team activities right this second officially, but don't think for a second that guys aren't in shape, guys aren't talking, guys aren't getting ready. You know, if you can get things done by March 1st and you take 3 or 4 days to get, you know, guys to Florida, I mean, it's going to take a little bit longer than that, probably more like a week because you still got to figure out free agency.
Yeah.
But, you know, free agency may be like a 48-hour just crazy period where who knows what happens. Anyway, we've talked about it. You may just see a bunch of guys sign one-year deals. You know, it may end up coming down to that where you just have to sign a one-year deal and then you figure out free agency next offseason. But I think they do get it done by March 1st. I think, like I said, I think you have a couple of weeks of spring training and the season starts on time. I just don't see them being willing. I know they're throwing that around that, oh, we're willing to miss games. Oh, well, we've got a war chest so we can. But nobody really wants to miss games. Nobody really wants to lose that revenue. Nobody really wants to upset the fans. I know people will say they don't care about the fans. They do, because at the bottom line, they do understand where their money comes from. So I think it's going to be a last-second thing probably, but I do think that it gets resolved right around the 1st of March, and we see baseball, we're playing regular season baseball by April 1st. I do believe that.
I hope so. I mean, this is a sport that can't afford to lose any sort of regular season play. I mean, we saw that, you know, in 2020, some viewership dropped a little bit. Some people came back last year. The revenue is, you know, obviously taking a hit with the way COVID is prevented teams from playing in certain areas, especially when you look up in Toronto, not being able to play up there for a long stretch of time. Obviously, that's not necessarily what's coming into play when it comes to the collective bargaining agreement, but revenue is still something that is being bandied about. You know, it really comes down to, you know, the economics of the game. You know, teams have become very, very powerful when it comes to the amount of money that they're bringing in, and they've been able to put a stranglehold on really how much money can be given out. And, you know, you hear all this talk about owners, you know, crying poor in a sense, when really, if you look at the multiple streams of income that these teams have, you know, teams like the Yankees and the Mets that are part of their own broadcast networks, you know, they get TV revenue that doesn't have to be accounted towards Major League Baseball. You've got teams like the Cardinals that have, you know, Ballpark Village that is putting a stream of money into the pockets of the owners in some way, shape, or form that's not associated to the baseball team. So, I mean, there's ways that owners are able to manipulate the money around the team to where they're still making money, but can almost sit there and maybe make the team look like it's losing money in a sense to kind of, you know, circumvent the system. So that's really what it's coming down to, is it obviously it's all about money. The teams have it. They're making a ton of it. players aren't getting enough of the pie, and that's what they're fighting to get. And it's also got to deal with arbitration and younger players and all that stuff. All this stuff still has to be settled. And it seems like there's very little movement going on either side. You know, like yesterday when they made the Players Association made their offer, they dropped their bonus pool request for pre-arbitration players from $105 million to $100 million. They shaved off that $5 million from that bonus pool request. So, you know, these sides are not making grand gestures yet. And yes, it still is a little early on. You do still have a couple weeks before you start hitting the emergency button. But this is a game of chicken that is getting dangerously close to being bad. And we talk about the NFL basically continuing to give themselves black eyes. Major League Baseball is not too far behind in being a league that is just kicking themselves in the back.
Yeah, no, it's not good. And, you know, the players did that because that's what the owners did with their offer. You know, they raised offers by like $5 million in the last offer. So, you know, both teams are just kind of, it's just back and forth. Again, it's part of negotiation. Like I said, I think it's going to get worked out. It's frustrating. It's aggravating. You know, and the owners do. The fact that they have millions and billions of dollars in the cry poor, I don't know if you heard this or not. Last week, the Rockies owner, that, you know, they had those back-to-back meetings. The first day of those meetings, in the meeting room, he literally said to everybody, with what the players are doing, you know, with what the players want, if we do this, there's a lot of us owners that won't even be able to afford to own our teams anymore. He was asked to not come back the next day to the meetings because what he said was so ridiculous. The other owners even realized how ridiculous it was and said, don't be here tomorrow.
That is, well, I mean, it's the Rockies. So, I mean, that doesn't surprise me that somebody in that organization would voice that kind of opinion. They basically paid the Cardinals to take their best player. So if that right there tells you alone why the Rockies are involved or anything, it's beyond me.
So, yeah, they don't have any money, but they can pay the Cardinals $50 million to take Nolan Arenado.
You wonder why they have no money, right?
Yeah.
Gave it all to the Cardinals.
Yeah. It's Bill DeWitt's fault. I can't afford my team anymore.
Oh, goodness, goodness, goodness. Oh, man. Well, we're definitely going to keep our ear to the ground as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. Hopefully, they're going to get back together and schedule some more meetings. The other part of this is, you know, last week they had a meeting on Monday. They came right back at it the next day and tried to work stuff out. Well, then they took a break for a week. They met yesterday, and they didn't schedule another meeting. That's another piece that you look at and you go, I mean, if we're really trying to make this thing happen, why are we not meeting more regularly, more consistently? I mean, yes, I know you have to take some of this stuff back to your group, whether it's the owners or the Players Association, and talk it out. But there's a thing called the internet. We're using it right now. How are you not conversing with your group through this while also being able to stay around town, have meetings, and continue to talk? Why are we stretching this out? I get it. It's negotiations. You got to, like, make the other person blink. I get it. But you got to continue to talk. You have to continue to push this thing forward, and nobody's doing that.
Well, and don't think, you know, and I've heard this from other people, don't think because there's not like big, huge group meetings, yeah, that there aren't little meetings, that there aren't little subcommittees from both sides that are talking daily and maybe even hourly.
Hopefully.
And then, you know, well, a lot of people in the know have pretty much said that is happening. So, you know, even though there aren't big meetings, there's stuff going on behind the scenes that we don't know about, which is probably better that we don't know every conversation that they're having. But yeah, it's frustrating. You know, I'm frustrated. You know how much I love baseball. And it's like, okay, you know, it's time for pitchers and catchers to be there. Think of all the people that have planned vacations around spring training that are trying to figure out what they're trip. Right. I mean, not that there's not stuff you can still do in Florida in March, you know, ooh, can I be in St. Louis in 20 degree weather with 13 inches of snow or just hang out in Florida and play golf while there's no baseball going on? I mean, or hang out at the beach. So there is not like those people aren't going to have things to do in Florida, but people want to see baseball, and it's going to happen. You know, it's coming sooner or later. It's just frustrating right now.
You know what it is? This is all a plot by Disney. They want to flood Disney World because the attendance there has been lacking over the last year due to COVID. So Disney is actually the one that's facilitating this lockout. They're actually paying the owners and the players to not meet, to have the lockout, so that people that have already schedule these non-refundable trips have to go down to Florida. They're going to get hooked into going to Disney World. Crowds will surge at Disney World. Revenue will rise there. Once they get that number that they're hitting, they're going to release the Players Association and Major League Baseball to come to an agreement, and everything will be opened up like right after that. So that there you go. There's the conspiracy theory. Disney is in control of everything, and they're the ones that are facilitating this Major League Baseball lockout.
You know, it's very possible they do own ESPN. They do own ESPN. Rich, real quickly, we won't talk about this very long. Did you see that ESPN came out with a list of their top 100 baseball players? Somebody tell me how Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter are both higher on that list than Albert Pujols.
Not just Albert Pujols, Bob Gibson too.
Yeah, I know. Like, but, I mean, just in their own time frame, there's no way in hell Derek Jeter or Alex Rodriguez were better baseball players than Albert Pujols.
No, I mean, you run down, and somebody, I can't remember who it was, but somebody on Twitter ran down, you know, Albert's got a higher WAR, a higher OPS, a higher slugging percentage. Like, he had, like, in, like, five or six different major categories, he was head and shoulders above Derek Jeter. The only thing Jeter had on him was championships, and that's because New York paid for a bunch of them. How he is in the 20s, even. It's not even so much that Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter are ahead of him. That in and of itself is a crime. But the fact that he's 26th in Major League Baseball history, he's one of the best pure right-handed hitters of all time. Yes, you can sit there and say his time in L.A. has really kind of diminished his, career in a sense. But what he did in St. Louis in 10 years is hands down by far the 10 greatest years that a right-handed hitter has had in a very, very long time. How he is not higher on the list and how those two guys are ahead of him just shows you the complete and utter bias of the East Coast that ESPN has. Sorry for the rant.
Well, and just to prove your point, even with all the bad years he's had in Los Angeles, if he keeps playing, he's still got a shot. I mean, it's a long way off, but he's still got a shot to get to 700 home runs. He still has a shot to break Hank Aaron's record for the all-time RBI leader in the history of the game. And you're going to put a guy like Alex Rodriguez that got caught doing steroids how many times ahead of him? And if Jeter hadn't been the shortstop of the Yankees, he probably wouldn't be in the top 100.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I mean, I think a lot of people, not even just St. Louisans, saw that and were kind of like, whoa, really? That's not true in any way, shape, or form at all. So, yeah, that's going to be one of those things that could be and should be talked about for a little bit longer. But once again, this ESPN, so don't necessarily take it at face value. You've got a lot of East Coast writers that are on that staff that's what they look at. So, hey, we are also a little bit Midwestern biased. That's kind of our thing. We are biased to the Midwest, but it's Albert Pujols, one of the greatest right-handed hitters of all time. We'll leave it at that. We got a couple minutes left here before we got to get out of here. We talk a little bit about college basketball. I mean, the Blues are off for about the next, 8 or 9 more days. All-Star break, the Olympic break that's now showing games, scheduled games because of COVID. They aren't going to the Olympics. A ton of stuff going on there. We'll talk about that next week when they get closer and closer to playing. Their next game is not until next Thursday against the Devils at home. So we got about 8 days till that goes down. So we'll talk about them later. Let's talk a little bit about college basketball. We mentioned earlier the fact that Mizzou fell to Florida today by 1. Puts them at 8-13 on the year, 2-6 in the SEC, 13th in the SEC. They had a 1-point loss to number 1 Auburn, and Auburn's first game is number 1. They got blown out by number 23 Iowa State last week, and then they lose by 1 to Florida. A very winnable and must-win game, in a sense, for Mizzou. They've got a couple more of those coming up against A&M and Vanderbilt here as well. But today's game, as we were talking before the show, is kind of a microcosm of the Quanzo Martin era, in a sense, where you get a lead in the first half, and you just fall apart in the second. And for a team in Florida that didn't score for an extended streak at the very end of the game, to be able to win on the last shot of the game is something that just should not happen.
No, it shouldn't. I mean, we've defended Konzo a lot on this show, but Konzo Martin's got to go. It's not getting any better at Mizzou. We're seeing the same things happen game after game, year after year, and, it's not just this game against Florida. They should have beat Alabama that second time they played them. They should have beat Auburn. They had that game, and they pretty much gave it away in the second half, and we've seen them do it over and over and over again, and, there's just you know, Kanzo just hasn't been able to build anything in Colombia for whatever reason. And so I think you've got to look other places and try to get this program turned around and back on the winning track. And I don't know. It's going to take a long time, I'm afraid, for Mizzou to be back where it should be.
And that's sad because the Mizzou basketball program was one of the big highlights coming into SEC play when the Tigers came into the SEC, obviously with what was going on at the time. So to see them kind of fall into where they are right now really definitely hurts. And you have to wonder if the Michael Porter thing and really both Porters kind of not getting a chance to play. I mean, Jonte played a full year while Michael was out, obviously, but then he got injured as well. I almost feel like the failure of the Porters, in a sense, kind of set Martin up for where we're at right now. I mean, a guy that could not get any sort of stability, any sort of, you know, just safety, in a sense. That's really what it comes down to. They just haven't had any composition or anything like that. And I think that stems from the very first year when you had all the high hopes with Michael Porter coming in and all of that, and it just fell on its face and they haven't been able to recover.
Well, you know, you knew that Michael Porter Jr. wasn't going to be there for more than a year.
Right.
But the thought was that they were going to win games and then you were going to be able to recruit. The yep. thing is that Kanzo had Michael Porter, he had Jonte, he had a couple of kids those first couple of years that he got in there, but he hasn't been able to build on it. I mean, when was the last time you had a big-name kid come to Mizzou? It just hasn't happened. You know, he hasn't been able to build on any success that he's had, and that's disappointing. You thought Kanzo Martin would be able to recruit well. He hasn't been able to. You know, we see kids transferring out left and right, and, you know, have been for the last couple of years, so that's a bad thing. Good thing is SLU is on a roll. Travis Ford and the Billikens are a fun ball club to watch, and I think the Billikens, I mean, they've still got to do some work in the A-10, but I think Travis is finally going to get his team into the big dance this year, which COVID has kind of robbed them of the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, they're 6-2 in the A-10 right now, 15-6 overall, and they played George Mason tonight, and guess what? The future coach of Mizzou might have been in town tonight as well, at George Mason, actually. You might have been playing against the future coach of Mizzou. That's Kim English, and, you know, they took SLU to double overtime, a 92-90 win for the Billikens. Uri Collins had a massive game today. He recently broke the record for assists in a career at SLU. Well, tonight he led the team in points with 35. Just the five, there's the 13 assists tonight as well, so he continues to up that career number. Uri Collins is coming to his own for sure, and he's really taken the Billikens on his back. And like you said, yeah, they got a little work to do in the A-10, but they've got a lot of games coming up where they can and should win and should continue to boost that record in the conference. And they have a chance of really going deep in that conference tournament as well, a team that can very well win the A-10. They're getting healthy. COVID has kind of gotten past them, hopefully. And like you said, COVID has robbed them of their chances of the NCAA tournament. And I think you're right. I think they get in, and I think they actually could very well make some noise.
Oh, I think they can too. I mean, I think they would have the last couple of years had they gotten in. And the exciting thing about when you talk about the Billikens is they're going to get even better next year because they've got another really strong recruiting class coming in. And then, you know, they've got some injured players this year that will be back next year. So I think they make a run this year, and I think they just keep building things. And Travis Ford's really got SLU going in the right direction, which, you know, a guy that, you know, a kid that coached under Norm Stewart and Rick Pitino, he definitely learned some really good lessons under those two.
Well, and the fact that he was able to face Rick Pitino recently against Iona and come away with the victory is big feather in the cap there. They got a big game coming up on the 5th against Dayton here at home. That's on Saturday. Dayton is also 6-2 in the A-10. And then they got a couple of very, very winnable games against LaSalle and a couple against St. Bonaventure on the 11th and 14th. And then the big one, February 19th. Right now, number one in the A-10, Davidson. They go to Davidson. That's going to be the game to watch. That right there could very well vault St. Louis up to the top. They have to win these four games going into that. Don't get me wrong, but if they can go on that streak and go into Davidson on a winning streak, that right there could decide the champion in the A-10. So definitely keep an eye on that. And the other team that's doing very, very well right now, despite having to deal with some injuries, although those injuries have been rectified, is Illinois. They're hosting Wisconsin right now. They are up by about 12 in the second half. Kofi Cockburn has come back. He came back on Friday against Northwestern after suffering a concussion. But he came back against Northwestern. He is having himself an absolute game right now. I'm grabbing his statistics as we speak. He is sitting at 30 points on 14 of 17 shooting, 10 rebounds, just three personal fouls. So Cochran is having a huge, huge night tonight. Illinois, a big-time upset win over Michigan State last week without Kofi, which was huge in their right, a one-point win over them. Then they squeaked out a win against Northwestern with Kofi coming back, and now they have the chance to upset number 11, Wisconsin, which would give them outright lead in the Big Ten. They're tied with Wisconsin right now and really put Illinois back near the top of the rankings as well. Illinois has quietly gone about their business this year and is by far the best team in the area, I think. This is a team that very, very well could be there at the end of the day when it comes to the national championship.
Yeah, I think they'll make a run. You know, I picked them to win last year. I had them as my team that won, and of course they ran into the sister jeans, and that didn't work out so well. So hopefully maybe this is the year for the Illini.
I hope so. When they played North Carolina in the national championship back in the early 2000s, that was a heartbreaker because I'm a huge fan of both teams. So I was happy either way. I was really hoping Illinois would win that game, though, just because of who they had on that team. But right now, North Carolina isn't the same as it used to be, so they may not even be in the question. So I'm a big-time Illinois fan. I'm really hoping they push it to the end, and I really hope Illinois takes the hardware at the very end of the day. It'd be a very, very fun team to watch. And I cannot believe it, man. We are getting so much closer to March Madness. It just makes me happy and giddy.
Yep. About, what, 6 weeks, I guess, till March Madness. So it'll be here before we know it.
It certainly will. It certainly will. Well, we are about out of time here tonight. It's been great to get back on the horse and talk sports, especially local sports, Midwest sports, because that's what we're all about. It's the Midwest bias, getting that information out there for those of you that are not a part of the East and West Coast. The Midwest is the best. I mean, come on. We have everything here. We've got championship teams. We've got great weather. and we've got passionate fans. That's what we got here in the Midwest. So, Scott, you got anything else before we head out tonight?
Just real quick, everybody that's watching, be safe tonight, tomorrow, if you have to go out and travel, not just in the St. Louis area, but all across the Midwest and two-thirds of the country, pretty much, as it's bitterly cold. There's ice, there's snow. You know, if you can, stay home. If you have to be out on the roads, be really careful. You know, anything can happen, and you could be in a car accident, and it might not even be your fault. So just be very careful, and everybody be safe, stay safe, and we will talk to you soon.
Yeah, we certainly will. We'll be back with you guys as soon as possible, maybe even tomorrow night, depending on how the snow and situation works out. Maybe some of us get another day off of work and school. We'll see. We'll see. Well, for Scott Tobin, I am Wags. We want to thank you guys for joining us. Once again, be safe out there. Be smart. Enjoy the games that are still going on tonight, and really go out there and support all your teams, whether it's professional, collegiate, high school, amateur. Get out there and support them as much as you possibly can. Until we see you again, have a great night.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.